Live from the editorial desk at the Daily Bugle and brought to you by Orkin, keeping pests in their place for over 100 years. Orkin, pest control. I'm Delmon.
And I'm Alicious.
And this is EQ2Talk. This is episode 22, and we are recording on April 22, not that we planned it, 2011. And Allie, why don't we have theme music?
Well, Del, a wise man once said, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
I'll tell you what a wise Del once said. Get music or get a boot up your ass. We have a lot to cover here in episode number 22, but I think, Allie, we have a little bit of errata from last time?
Yeah, I think I'm going to start qualifying everything that I say with a, I'm not quite 100% sure, but, and then I'll be covered. Because it seems like every time I speak, I say something wrong.
Why don't we just rename this segment to Allie's Errata?
Okay. Because that's usually what it is, isn't it?
Well, I'm never wrong, so.
Oh, okay. So in the last episode, I said, was it in episode 21 when I told you you couldn't transmute the public quest items?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, that was totally wrong. I was actually thinking of the Chrono Portal loot items. You can't transmute those, and if you try to sell them to the broker or the vendor, you get a copper.
But you can sell the public quest rewards.
Yes, and transmute them.
Sounds good. So I will get to transmuting the 3 breastplates and 4 weapons that I now have.
Ugh. So we have a very special guest joining us today to talk about raiding. He's a regular listener of EQ2Talk. He's a dirge on Crushbone. He's a Pisces. And he likes long walks on the beach. Del, can you welcome Spiders to the show?
I can welcome Spiders. Welcome Spiders.
Oh, no. Now I'm in trouble.
Or should I say, as it's written here in front of me, Spider Z.
Remind me to duel the Templar one of these days.
I am a lover, not a fighter.
Spiders is on the Crushbone server, formerly Lucan Delaire. I said you were a dirge. You are a dirge today, right?
Yes, ma'am. I'm a dirge today. My raiding guild, we needed a troop for a short term, and I had to become a troop, and now I'm back to a dirge.
That's a foreign concept for a lot of people. But we can talk a little bit more about that as we get into some deeper stuff about raiding. So you're with?
I'm with the Guild Strike.
So would you say that it's fair to say it's a worldwide guild?
Fair to say, yes, ma'am. Okay. I think going into today, we're number 2 worldwide.
Yeah, you were 2nd last night when I checked. I thought I'd throw that out there. I did check. So I assume, being in a raid guild, you raid a lot. Obviously, I'm guessing probably, what, like 4 to 5 nights a week or more?
5 to 6 nights on average, 5 nights a week. Yes, ma'am.
Wow. That's a lot. And, like, would you say, what, like 3-4 hours at a time?
I got to do math here real quick. Hold on. On average, 5 to 6 hours a night on average.
Wow. That's a lot. At least to me, that's a lot.
But let me ask you, of those, 5 to 6 nights a week, so 4 to 5 hours a night, I mean, how much is actually engaged combat or setting up or evaluating strats?
Of the 5 hours, I would say 5 to 6 hours. On a 5-hour night, I would definitely say good 4-4.5 hours. Comes raid time, everybody's already formed up. We usually start forming up about a half hour before raid time, and we're pretty much on the clock the entire time. Go, 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 go. Some of the raid zones we can clear in as little as 45 minutes. Some of them a little longer, depending upon the zone and what we're working on.
And I'm sure in that the more you've killed it, the faster your acceleration is through the zone because you become more comfortable with all about that zone.
Yeah, we've done some of the normal zones and then turned around and switched right over to the challenge or the hard mode zones. And as soon as you engage the mobs, you can tell right away which one's the normal one, which one's the hard mode. The normal ones, we just burn through like butter.
So how far is Strike into Destiny of Velia's content? Not that I would know what you're talking about, but maybe some of our listeners do, and I know Dell probably does, for reference.
As far as the normal modes or the hard modes? There's a difference on there.
Okay.
The normal modes, we have completely cleared all the normal content, the quote-unquote easy mode or however you want to put it. That one we've completely cleared through. All of the current content we're currently working on with a lot of might is the hard mode stuff, the stuff that's really tough and really takes a lot of teamwork to get down pat.
Have you done any of the contested?
Yeah, the Tantor, the big elephant-looking guy that's over by the Rygor camp, we've taken him down. I think we took him down a couple days after the expansion actually came out. February, it was within that first week that it came out, we took him out.
I don't think I've ever seen that mob.
Well, he's the only contested mob we've actually gotten, I guess, at the time we had access to. The other one, I believe, was deep in Kale, but don't quote me on that right at the moment. To give you an example of how hard my guild pushes content, the first night that we had access to all of the raid zones, which was the day of the expansion, I think 2/22/11, we actually cleared one of the zones completely, one of the easy mode zones completely. It wasn't the fact that we just had access to beta, because half of our guild player base, did not even engage in the beta at all. They didn't want to have anything to do with it, touch it at all. They didn't want that part. But it was just the fact that we figured out the strats really quickly, figured out what worked for us, what didn't work for us, and we continued to work and push on it. Our guild leaders, he's basically like a drill sergeant. Get up, go. And that's just the mentality that we have.
The membership of Strike, you mostly all within the same time zone, or you have members from all over the world?
We have members all over the world. All over the world. It's a guild that most of our player, it's strangely enough, most of our applicants come from other servers. And when we were on Lucan Delir, we really didn't have many players that came from Lucan Delir. We had more players that came from out of server and transferred over to our server to just come as an applicant, not as a actual, I'm automatically a member of Strike. No, you have to go through, you have to survive basically the 5 weeks of being an applicant before you're even, then you become do we want to let this guy in or not?
So what you're saying is you have people actually transferring to Crushbone from another server specifically to apply to Strike?
Yes, ma'am.
The hopes of getting in?
With the hopes of getting in, yes.
Wow.
The average player, knowing going into a situation with Strike, they need to know you've got to have dedication. At the drop of a hat, you need to be ready to raid. At the drop of a hat, you need to be ready to put 110% into everything that you're doing. It's not like you can have good days and bad days. You need to be a consistent player. You need to put out whether you're healing or DPSing or whatever, you need to be at 100% all the time. Yes, we have players that transfer over. Yes, we have players that make the cut. Some of them don't make the cut. They don't make it a Care Bear. This is not a Care Bear guild. This is a hardcore, go for the throat guild that is very vicious and will go after that kill. If it's killable, they'll go after it. If it's bugged, they'll let you know that mob is currently bugged.
So let me ask you this. Do you have, in your raid force, are people kind of in the same boat in their regular lives? Or do you have people who have families? Do you have people who have, you know, who are students? Do you have different types of people? Or is it a lot of single people with a lot of time that they can devote specifically to raiding without somebody crying in the other room.
All the way across the board. It's not a only for single people. It's not a only for families. We have players that have families. We have players that go to school. Without going into specifics, one of our leadership individuals is actively in school and will say, hey, I'm going to be an hour late because I've got a specific thing I'm going on with class. I have another one, you know, a couple other players that, hey, I've got to take care of my child or I've got to take care of my children, and they'll be right there. But it's all the way across the board. It's not one specific type of person. It's more of the mentality and more of the drive to be 100%.
So given that you have people in different places in their lives, does that mean that you sort of have extra people to sort of fill spots when needed, when someone's late an hour or has to take care of kids or whatever, or do you kind of run more lean?
We have a tendency to run little on the lean side, but we also have, you know, applicants to the guild that are able to fill in those spots that are in there. The players that we need to beat a particular encounter are not available at that time. We go and find another raid zone that we haven't done or whatever, and then as soon as that person's able to log in, we go right back to that particular boss or that encounter that we were working on. Definitely, the goal is to beat a particular, we have a goal, like, this is the boss we're working on, but if the players are not there, we'll find something else to do.
Got it. That makes sense. My other question was going to be, if you do have to sort of bump people in and out, is it hard to keep people? Because I've been on that end of the being bumped periodically, and I was on rotation kind of. That part was kind of annoying and difficult to sit out.
I think that's the hardest part on with the mentality that you have to have with our guild as a whole. And I want to say any of the guilds that are at the top 5-10%, any of the guilds that are up there, all of the players that are in those guilds that are the raiding players, all of them have the mentality that I am number one in my particular class. And you
of course
want me in your raid group. And when you have to sit a player that has that mentality, I think that's the hardest part for those players, especially the applicants, for them to understand is you also have to have patience and you kind of have to have those humble moments for those other players that are already there. And I think that's one of the things with some of our applicants that sometimes can be the hardest part to bear is they have to sit out for, you know, two or three encounters or a whole raid zone or sit out for an evening. I think that's the hardest part for some of those players, more mentally than anything else, is because they're like, I am number one in my particular class and you should have me in your raid group. The encounters that are there, some of them you have to have 8 priests in, some of them you can have 4 priests in. So when you have to sit out those other 4 priests, they're like, hey, I want to be in the raid group. So that's probably the hardest part.
The analogy that I often draw for something like that is, say, from the sports world. I want people who are on my team who want to be on the field. They want to be the guy who's going to make the big play, be part of the activity. But then you have your head coach, which is kind of the raid leader equivalent, to say, hey, I can only put so many people on the field at any given point. This is the lineup I want to go with right now because I think it gives us the best opportunity to win. So as much as you've got players who are motivated, and I do believe should be motivated to be out there every time and want to be the guy to make the play, they also have to respect the leadership to say, when I'm told it's my time to roll out, I have to sit. But eventually I will get the call and I'll get to go back on the field. So whenever I've been raiding, I almost never volunteer to sit because I want to be on the field. I want to be part of the team. I want to be playing. That's why I signed up why I joined this guild or this raid is to be raiding, not to be watching from the sidelines. But I understand that at times, hey, you're not the best guy for this position or this encounter. We'll get you in maybe later, but for now we're going to go with this lineup.
I've found that when I have in the past, I have a window of maybe like 4 to 6 months when I feel was my top level of rating. And during that time, when given the opportunity to sit, I didn't offer to sit unless I felt like it was really my turn. And I have offered to sit at times, and I've found that, and I, you do it in tells basically. And I've been told, thank you, we'll get you next time. And then other times I've been told, well, actually we really want somebody else to sit. So it's kind of almost like, you know, thanks for volunteering, but this particular time we're going to have this other person sit. I've been on both ends, and I think it's just, it actually kind of makes you look better.
to add a harshness to ours, boss dead, boots going out, and all of a sudden you're not in the raid group anymore, and you've been replaced while you're still standing in the zone. So you're like, okay, what's going on? And you don't even hear, hey, we need to get another player in, or we need to get whatever. It's all of a sudden you're not in the raid group. When you have a five-hour window to get four of the five or four of the six raid zones done in, your whole thing is to be as time efficient as possible. I mean, you're on vent. You can hear everybody talking. Everybody's talking back and forth. You can hear the raid, you know, raid leader going such and such. Let's get moving. You can see the raid force moving. You already know what's going on. I mean, it's everybody's communicating. It's really quick, really fast paced. There is no slow. These players, they only know like fifth gear. They don't know first and second. These guys are go, go, go. We'll have chests that are sitting from the first boss and we're on the fourth boss. That's how these guys are. They're just go, 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 go. There is no slow gear on these people at all.
It's interesting listening to you talk about this because, you know, while I know that there are, you know, I don't really know how you prefer to be called, hardcore raiders or worldwide raiders or contested or progression or what. But it seems like there are so many, there's such a range of raiding. It's almost like a subculture within EQ2 players. It's almost as if there are as many raiding styles as there are gameplay styles, maybe even more. Like there's that really hardcore go, go, go mentality. And then there's pushing the content, but not necessarily quite as quickly. Then there's kind of like more progression oriented, but life comes first. And then there's casual, and then there's occasional. You know what I mean? Almost as if
that's what adds to the variation of EQ2 and how it's such a wide game.
Yeah,
I don't want to say that, you know, we're on the bleeding edge, but we're
you kind of are
right there at the bleeding edge. If we've been working on a mob for 3 to 4 or 5 days. And we're really struggling on something, and we say this part of it's broken. We've already done like 400 attempts on the mob. We've already worked every possible thing. We have people communicating back and forth. We have, when you have people that are at this level that micromanage every little detail of what they do, and they tell you something is broken, it's broken. If they go back and you say, hey, I need you to make 400 arrows, you're like, what? Wide range of players. Most of the average players, they don't understand. I don't want to use the word mentality. They don't understand the drive that's behind the players that are in the top 10 guilds per se worldwide. It's either there or it's not. It's not something you can teach somebody to do. It's really weird trying to explain that to somebody that's not. You take those type of players and you put them in an area and say, hey, I need you to do a quest, and they're all thumbs. Some of them are all thumbs. They're like, what? You want me to do what?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because I think a lot of players, like casual players or like, I don't know, people who don't raid, I think a lot of people sum up raiding or that like huge spectrum of what raiding is with just one word, and that's raiding. But it's really not all the same. It's not just one flavor. There's so many flavors of raiding.
Certainly you have that spectrum, and I think that's what you're kind of referring to, that spectrum of, you know, strike on maybe one end of that spectrum, and the extreme come as you are if we ever raid at all at the far end.
Mm-hmm.
And is it all raiding? Sure. I guess if you're in anything more than a six-man group, it's its rating. But there's, as you say, varying definitions and commitments and attitudes and efforts that go into each of them.
It's just kind of interesting. I have a question, without you getting yourself into trouble, about what percentage of your raid party is female?
Low. We have active females. We currently have two.
Wow.
Both of them, coincidentally, are healers.
Sad.
When I say this is a wolf pack mentality, I literally mean this is a wolf pack mentality. A combination of an old guys club, a combination of water cooler talk, and a combination of almost as vulgar as you can possibly stand, but at the same point, they all have a common goal. Their whole common goal is kill whatever's in front of them. It doesn't matter what it is, it's kill whatever's in front of them. On that same point, they do talk back and forth and et cetera, and we treat with the ladies, and the ladies can hang with the guys just as much as the women can. So it's not that they're, you know, it's not a racist thing or anything like that. The women, if they can, you know, put out the numbers that they have to put out, they can hang with us just as much as men can.
So I actually was going to lead you down the garden path to something that might get you into trouble no matter which way you go. Somebody once told me that girls do 25% less DPS. Can you confirm or deny that assertion?
Deny. Clearly deny.
Thank you.
Clearly deny.
Thank you.
They do 45% less.
Okay.
Whatever. No. Women are just as equal. Coincidentally, we have two healers, the two female healers, and they put out the numbers just like the men do. And if they want a piece of gear, they can go, hey, I want that, and it's theirs. I mean, it's not that they get it by default. It's if they need the upgrade, they get the upgrade.
What kind of healers are they, just out of curiosity?
Templar and Inquisitor.
I was going to say maybe they out DPS me. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, one of them, I cannot. They know their classes pretty well. They, like I said, the amount of polish that these players have, when it comes down to how well they know characters and players, they know them well enough that I'm a dirge. If they know my multi-attack, my flurry goes off on them, or my mythical buff goes off on them, it's good game. So they will put range between me and them, or they will get it so I can't get within inside of that so I can melee hit them. They know, you know, and that's just dueling around. These two, they know their classes pretty well. They know different players. They know different characters. They can dance around pretty well and hang with the best of them.
Well, I'm glad you denied.
You also have to understand, because of the level that Strike is at as a guild, and the kills that they have under their belt worldwide, the amount of gear that they have, trying to take down, you know, just in a friendly duel, trying to take down an average Strike member in a friendly duel it's a feat unto itself. It's not like you can just go, oh, hey, I'm going to poke you one time and you're dead. No, it's a fight. And that's the mentality that kicks in on them.
I just want to go back to gender for a second. And I believe that people are motivated, regardless of their gender, if they want to play the game at that level, regardless of their gender, they're going to want to do it just because of who they are. But do you think in general it is a male-dominated play style at that end of the spectrum?
Gut feeling, yes. Right off the top of my head, I don't know. I honestly don't know.
So earlier you were talking about raiding with folks from all different locations. What type of unique challenges does that present to you?
English is a complicated language. It can be a really complicated language. We deal with players that English is not the primary language on, or they understand a little bit of it, not full part. And this has been with various guilds that I've seen, that you've got French Canadians, you've got people from Argentina, people from Brazil, people from Australia. Not only is the time issue kind of interesting at times as well, but also the language. Sometimes when you say, hey, heal somebody, heal in their native language could mean something else in English to them. So it could be kind of interesting, but overall, most of them, give them a couple of weeks and they've they've learned real quick that they need to cure, they need to heal or whatever, or they're not quite there. They're kindly asked to step out of the door.
Interesting. Are there any, like, phrases that everybody knows? Sort of like another beer waiter? Like, how many different languages can you say, can I have another beer in?
I'm trying to think of what, we have a player that goes ninja, 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 ninja. That means he's going to take a bio break.
If you call it out, it's not a ninja.
He spams it. We have certain players that have colorful personalities. When they say certain things, sometimes you have to ask them to repeat it, and other times you have to not ask them to repeat it, but clarify on what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, though, how many different ways do you have to say, wipe it? Because I hear that a lot whenever I'm on raids, usually because I failed to cure something or cured something I shouldn't have.
There are times that our raid leader, well, I want to say the guild leader, he is the definitive yes or no answer type person. He will either give you a yes or a no, and that's the end of the discussion. When he says wipe it literally means stop healing, stop doing whatever you can. This particular attempt is dead, and just redo it again. But the whole point is, when he says that's it, that's the end of the attempt, literally you see healers back up or stop casting or whatever, or you see DPS back off to point where they know they can be res. Once a call like that to wipe the raid has been called, you literally see people almost go into an autopilot mode where they go back to where the healers are, where they can be res, where they can go to a res spot. If not, then they know right off the rip they've got to run back as soon as the encounter has been reset. Then they're right back. They're rezzed and on the way back to where the raid is.
That's one thing that used to really be a huge pet peeve of mine when the raid leader would call, you know, and obviously being in a casual sort of environment, it's different. I don't want to say less disciplined. It's more 24 independent minds working at the same time. And a lot of people follow the raid leader and a lot of people don't. And when the raid leader says, wipe it, to me, that means wipe it. You stop healing, you stop stacking, and you just go die as fast as possible. It used to bug the crap out of me when you still see people doing stuff. And you're like, okay, you're just making this take longer. Could you stop? And maybe that's the difference between casual and, like, the next step up.
Well, I think what they're trying to do at that point is they're trying to get themselves on the parse and... during the wipe call is a cheap way to get yourself on there.
No. You're so negative. You have no faith in people.
I'm telling you what I'm doing.
Oh.
With some of the hardcore raid mobs that are currently in Destiny of Elios, there are certain DPS checks or curse checks or what have you as far as the encounters that... literally, if you don't meet that DPS check or you don't cure that curse that was supposed to be cured, the raid is pretty much wiped. It's all a matter of either the next AoE is going to come and everybody's going to be dead, or you're going to get that curse and everybody's going to sit there for 5 minutes, which is, with the way we raid, if you're sitting there for 5 minutes with a curse that, you know, you shouldn't have had to begin with because somebody failed to do it, then you're already getting chewed out. You're already like, you're wasting our time. What are you doing here?
Sort of to give people an idea of what hardcore raiding is, people who don't raid or who aren't at that level, give us like a little bit of the atmosphere. Like, how much freedom do you have to spec your character? How much input do you have with strats or group setup or things like that? Do you get phone calls in the middle of the night telling you you have to log in? Things like that.
Specking the character. I'm a dirge. Hardcore raid guild, I better have Blade Dance on my bar somewhere, somehow. I'd better know where it is at a moment's notice. That just happens to be a dirge's or a bard's case in particular. As far as specking the character, you have to understand we're kind of at the point that, and Delmont in previous podcasts mentioned, this is the point where you're micromanaging every little stat, every little detail that you possibly can. If you can find a way to pop out 15% more double attack, or if you're finding a way to pop out 300 more agility, or you're popping out a way that I can heal for 700 more, trust me, we figured it out. We've gone through the trees. We're talking back and forth. We're communicating. We said, oh, we saw more DPS out of this one than we did this one. I can't tell you how many strike members have played with training dummies for hours on end to try to get that last little 0.3% out of a DPS, or, you know, they're doing certain things. We use every possible combination you can think of, whether it be using potions, whether you know, going back to previous raid content, such as like fire seeds that at this level, you're like, well, that's old raid content. Well, it works. It works on a boss. Deity buffs, signets. You know, you go to raid, you better have a signet on your bar and in your bag. You better have a raid res signet as well. Even if you're not a healer, you better have that raid res signet. Yes, most of our healers, I want to say 3/4 of them, actually do have the AA point dropped into raid res or res after death. But at the same point, you still, as a regular player that is not a healer, you'd better have a raid res signet sitting somewhere in your bag or on your bar, definitely.
It's more like those choices they're just sort of the matter of course. Those choices aren't, it's not as if somebody's standing on a podium telling you, you must do X, Y, Z. You're all working towards the same goal. So you all want to work and do the best you can. And so everybody's kind of talking to each other and speccing in the best possible way, or maybe having multiple specs where they can go switch out.
Yeah, most of our players have a AA mirror or an AA mirror sitting in their house somewhere, you know, ready to go at a moment's notice. They also have the deity altar, whatever, and our mages are all talking to each other, hey, what's the best deity or whatever. I can go to moment's notice, hey, what raid zone are we going to? Okay, I don't need Blade Dance here. Let me go get my DPS spec. Whatever's going on, second we're in raid, hey, what zone are we doing so I know which AA spec I need?
But you'd almost say it's not necessarily a lack of freedom, but more so the players already have the desire to get that 0.1% more out of their characters. So it's not like they're being told, they're already doing it on their own and are self-motivated enough to want to get that one more little mid-max number out of themselves.
Yeah. If I don't use Victorious Concerto in a fight and I have a mage in my group, that mage is sending me a tell. Hey, how come you didn't use Victorious Concerto during that fight? Or how come you didn't do it during this encounter? I mean, these players are on. It's not just this is how they are individually. They're also in the actual raid group as well. They're also talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And communicating, hey, how come you didn't use Blade Dance at this point? Or how come you didn't use Victorious Concerto at this point? Or, you know, what was going on? Why was your parse so low? So, yeah, these guys, not only are they individually, but they're also on top of each other as well.
Now, does Strike use some type of call tree for contests or stuff that are up?
Yeah, most players, even if they're in standby mode, we have a specific chat channel that all of our members are required to be in, as well as the applicants as well. So we're able to do that. That way, if you're sitting on your alt and it's not raid time or whatever, you should be in that channel on your alt even, so that you know what's going on. Also, most of our players, just whether they're checking email or whatever, they're in vent. You can talk to them. You can talk to them real quickly, send them private chat or whatever. You know, most players know. At this point, there's also, you know, we do have phone numbers in certain cases listed as well. So if you get a hold of somebody, hey, call me on this number. The ability to get a hold of one of our players is there on any number of levels, whether you just have to send them a quick text, whether you have to pick up the phone and call them like the old school EQ one way, or whether you just have to send them a text via in-game, it's there. All of our players are able to be accessed in any way, shape, or form really quickly.
That is something, at least for myself, I have left behind in my EQ1 days. The call trees and being woken up that Emperor Shirazaraz is up. Because back then, we rated on the mob schedule. Today, it's not as prevalent in EQ2 because we have persistence. We have zones that are available on our schedule, not necessarily on the mob's schedule anymore.
As far as the contested mobs, when we were on Lucan Delir prior, the problem we were having wasn't the fact of the contested mobs whatsoever. It was the fact that other guilds on the server could not put out the amount of DPS needed or could not figure out the strats on some of the mobs that need to be killed. If the mob was up, we would wander over there, kill the mob, whatever, etc. But we didn't always have a, you know, somebody would be contested on it. That when you've already farmed the gear off of it consistently, you don't need to go back and kill that, so other guilds would have an opportunity on it. But it's in all cases, it's not always that way.
Sort of like an honor among thieves thing. Like, you don't go farm a contested just because you can. Give other people a chance.
If your primary raid characters already have the gear off the contested, if you remember, the contested in Sentinel's Fate also shared the same loot table as other mobs.
Right.
You didn't need to farm it like you did in, you know, the Shadow Odyssey, etc., as much. So you could get it, etc., there, and if you didn't, you could always go back to the hard mode versions of those mobs. Versus this time, we didn't really need much off of the Tantor.
So let me ask you real quickly, though, with a one-word answer. Avatars, bring them back, yes or no?
Yes.
All right. Spoken like a true end-of-the-spectrum raider.
Being in a raid guild that is doing sort of this bleeding edge content, you guys get to see everything first, which has to be really exciting. But I would imagine that there's also a downside to that. And we sort of talked about this in game at one point. You're also the first to see bugs or problems with encounters.
What are these bugs you speak of?
So do you have any stories or like experiences with bugs or things that are not necessarily working as intended in raid situations that you've encountered so far in the expansion?
Irene the Broken. Yeah, we've had a couple of them. We've seen a couple of them, or we've downed a boss at the end of a zone or whatever. Paracelsus in Sentinel's Fate, for example, was a classic example, and then they nerfed it. So we had to learn it kind of the quote-unquote the hard way. And then, obviously, we got to the point that we didn't need to do it anymore. With this expansion, we've seen that a couple of times so far where we've done stuff, and we've either found a boss that is broken entirely, or it's quote-unquote working as intended, but is meant to be unkillable.
Meant to be unkillable.
AKA, they haven't actually finished the encounter.
Interesting.
Do you and the members of Strike enjoy working with Sony's development team a little bit to try to iron out some of these details? Or obviously, you'd probably prefer that it all worked the first time, but being on that bleeding edge, you're going to bump into these. Do you get some excitement or some satisfaction out of having helped fix it for the rest of us?
Are you calling us part of the beta team for them? Is that what I'm hearing? No.
Look at it this way. You're my advanced problem-solving team.
Keep in mind, the average time that we actually engage an encounter, we've probably engaged it about 30 times before you've engaged it one time. So to give you a rough estimate, when our raid leader says wipe the raid, obviously we've gotten to the point that we've either downed the boss or there's a major problem. And on that, you'll see different times. We don't actively like pursue the development team. Hey, what's going on? Strike's been accused of that in the past. We do not actively engage with the development team whatsoever. We've had a couple of them that have talked to us, but we do not actively engage them. We submit bug reports just like everybody else does. We do actually, you know, contact them on the forums and say, hey, this encounter's bugged and this is the reason why. When we submit a bug report like that, it's not like, you know, we just give them, hey, this encounter's broken. we are actually able to give them an ACT readout of what's going on with it. We're able to give them, hey, this is what our main tank was getting hit with. This is, you know, down to the detail. This is what the melee hit was on the main tank. If the main tank gets hit with 135K melee hit, then obviously there's something either wrong with the encounter or we did something wrong. By the time we're at the point that submitting a bug report, we've already engaged it over a period of several days before we say, hey, this encounter is actually bugged.
And that must be a little bit of a challenge too, because, you know, you're trying to gauge, well, is it really working as designed, and we necessarily as players haven't figured it out or solved the puzzle, or is it really a mechanically broken thing?
That's the part that we deal with almost on a daily basis with most of the mobs that we deal with. I'm not trying to put us above anybody else. We have players that are actively bouncing information back and forth. They can get really crazy and everybody's talking to each other and, hey, this is what I experienced over in this corner. This is what I experienced over in this corner. This is what ACT is showing. This is what's going on. I mean, you also have things that are going on in the encounter as well that we're having to figure out, okay, this first pull, this is what happened 20 seconds into the fight. This next pull, this is what happened at 22 seconds that happened into the fight. We're literally tearing apart these fights second by second by second all the way through until we've either downed the boss, we've figured out the encounter, or we figured out where it's bugged. This is, the mob was supposed to pass through here and it didn't, or the ad that spawned got stuck at this point and there's nothing we can do about it. We can't AoE it down, we can't, you know, melee it, we can't taunt it. It's literally stuck in place. That's what's going on. So, you know, whatever we're having to do in order to figure that part out, then we submit the bug report or whatever and say, hey, this is where it's broken.
So in that same sort of vein of being on the bleeding edge, you also get to see the main EQ2 storyline unfold along the raiding path. Does your raid force, or does the hardcore raider, if you can speak for the hardcore raider in general, kind of ignore the lore, or do you get involved in it? I mean, do you sort of like take a step back and read the text and sort of enjoy the moment, like when you down a boss, or is it mostly about the mechanical part?
That's a mixed bag. That's a mixed question. We have some players in our raid group that are very lore oriented. We have one player that you could ask him anything related to EQ1 or EQ2 and how lore relates. The guy's a genius as far as how all that goes. He could tell you anything that's going on. He could tell you, oh, hey, this is King Tormax and this is what he did in EQ1. EQ2, just as knowledgeable, boom, boom, boom. Tell you everything. There's other players that like, hey, that's King Tormax, I'm going to kill him. End of story.
Where do you fall on that spectrum?
I want to say over the last couple of years, I've kind of, I'll slide either side of the line, depending upon what it is. Like the Kuldang Ring quest, I thought was one of the most intriguing ones, and how it had took you to various different zones and had you talk to different people and were kind of engaged in the story. I slide back and forth depending upon relevance to the encounter, I guess.
I always wondered that, whether raiders, like hardcore raiders, were into the lore or if they were just like whatever.
I think right now a lot of the upper end raiders, they're wanting avatars back, but I think what I've mainly been hearing lately is stuff like, you know, the deity buffs, they need a major revamp. You know, they need something like that to kind of put them back in perspective, back in line with, you know, several expansions later, we have these re-innervated deity buffs or the stuff like that, the miracles. They would like to see, you know, from what I'm hearing, they would like to see something like that. If you're going to reintroduce the avatars, you know, give us new miracles, give us new stuff like that, stuff that is still, you know, part of that storyline, part of that gameplay, but at the same point, it brings all of that older stuff, the stuff we've all been using, kind of back in line as well.
The way I interpreted that question was to mean, do raiders like dialogue, or do they just fast forward to the action and watch that? Oh, come on, that was funny.
Strike members, by large, are more of the wolf, we will devour anything. it kind of becomes I'm gonna chew through it. It doesn't take them long.
The game is ultimately about killing mobs and taking their stuff.
Yeah. Yep. I'm in total agreement on that.
To change gears a little bit, though, we've been talking a lot about raiding, but in terms of the six-man stuff, the group, where you are on the spectrum, you know, heavily geared, completely mastered out, that sort of stuff, do you find that a challenge when it comes to, say, getting involved in a pickup group? Because you are so, well, let's call it what it is. You're so uber compared to the rest of us.
It presents different challenges, to be honest with you. My class is a dirge. I'm more of a supporter role. I'm not a pure tier one DPS assassin or ranger like Allie. So
don't say tier one, please.
I'm not on the upper tier for the DPS for the melee. I have a problem when I go into an instance like a PQ or a pug group where I'll end up pulling aggro off the main tank and end up, if you want to say for it, I'll end up tanking the zone as a dirge. And I'm sure it's not meant that way. It's just I put out so much DPS that I end up literally pulling aggro off the tank consistently. And it becomes a different game where now I have to kind of lower my DPS to let the tank get aggro, especially with some of the encounters where they are so tricky or they are, you know, where it's status checks on certain things. That mm-hmm. becomes a different issue upon itself.
Do you, like, carry around other gear with you to, like, dumb down your gear? I'm sorry, was that a bad question? I'm like picturing he's got like five sets of gear. Let me size up this tank and let's see. You're kind of paper tankish. Let me just switch into my crappy gear, my master crafted gear.
You and unwashed mass tank. I will come from my ivory tower and or I will raid. I will play naked for you.
You go ahead and start. I'm gonna go get a beer, and when I come back, I'm gonna start auto attacking, and then maybe I won't pull aggro.
Oh no, I'm laughing at that.
Stand aside, paladin. Allow me to show you how it's done.
I'm not trying to paint him in a bad way. I'm just trying to, there's got to be a challenge to this. There's got to be like, it's like a whole nother game to try
It's a totally different game at that point. It's, Allie, let me load you down with tier one, tier two gear and throw you into a PQ.
No, no.
Okay.
I wouldn't know what to do with myself. I already have enough problems.
It becomes a totally different. It's hard to explain when.
I know exactly what it feels like. I mean, I'm sorry to answer your question for you, but I in the last expansion, I really feel like the raiding was way too easy. If I was able to do raiding in the last expansion, then it was too accessible to the masses.
How far did you get last expansion?
Oh, I don't know. We didn't get that super far, but we shouldn't have been where we were. I think this expansion put us where we. No way.
You were up to Rowan Thier in the last expansion.
Yeah. Yeah. We, that was pretty much where the door closed. But I mean, this expansion, I think we're exactly where we should be, which is outside the door of the first zone, like not even entering. I sort of feel like I got all this gear that I really had no business having. So I end up in these groups and I'm like, dying left and right. So I have to like literally not auto attack or I'll pull aggro or stop grouping with people so I'd only group with specific tanks that I knew could handle it because I wasn't capable of de-aggroing fast enough or slow enough or whatever. You know, how do you slow your DPS when your auto attack one arrow pulls aggro? That was my problem in the last expansion. I haven't had this problem since Destiny of Valor's launch because I don't have any raid gear.
Keep that mentality. Yeah. And you probably had, what, give or take, 100% multi-attack before, right? Give or take-ish?
In the last
before?
Yeah. Yeah-ish. Yeah, I don't remember.
Okay. So
I think I was over. I don't know. I was over.
You had 100% multi-attack, give or take, you know.
Yeah.
A little variance here. Okay, yeah. So you take that 100% multi-attack. Now you take that same player and you put them at 300% crit and 400% multi-attack. So for every one arrow you shoot, it's 5 arrows. Now put that perspective. Now take that player and throw him in PQ.
No. Bad. Very bad things happen. I can't even fathom the numbers you're talking about right now. Because, I mean, I thought I was doing a bad thing. When I look at my stats right now, and I have like 250% crit. And I have like less than 100 multi. Like, what am I doing? Why? I'm not trying to do this. It's so unbalanced. But I don't know. Whatever. Whatever. I'll figure it out eventually.
You're actually at the opposite spectrum we're at. All of the raid gear has multi-attack on it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have crit on it. So we have to throw in a dormant. We have to throw in whatever in order to equalize it out.
Yeah, I'm like throwing all this multi-attack, adornment stuff going. I've been slacking on my adornments, but I put a bunch of stuff in because I finally got my adorning skill maxed. Well, not maxed, but to 400 at least. And so now I can make my own adornments. Yay me. So now I have my little matrix up and ready to go of all my stuff that I need to make. But I'm waffling on what I want to make because I don't really know. I don't know why I have 250% crit.
This goes into another thing where our guild has a large enough income from selling, and I don't know how I want to describe this, but we have a large enough income of selling items from zones. Like our healers, they don't need that mallet, so we'll sell it. You know, it's like opening the channels. Hey, 80 through 89, we have this mallet. This is how much the open bid is on it. This is the buyout price, and we'll sell it. And so we have enough money that comes in. So if we need to buy a quick adornment, or if we need to buy masters, or if we need to buy whatever in order to get that player to that point, voila, the guild, I don't want to say in all cases provides all the materials, but in 90% of the cases, hey, if you need a master, our raid leader will just go to the broker, buy the master, here you go, voila. If you need adornments, you just say, hey, I need 3 multi-attack adornments, boom. Somebody will either make them or whatever. We have enough materials in the guild that here you go. Here's what you need.
So you just opened up another question that I didn't think of until you said it. Selling loot out of the raid zones that you're doing, I wondered whether that choice is something that you mull over. Being the royal you as the raid force. Like, do you decide, okay, nobody else is doing this zone. Do we really want to unleash this hammer?
Yes. In certain particular cases, that is a question our guild discusses. In certain particular cases. One of the particular cases, and I'll use the sword off of Rowan Thir, the 4-rune Rowan Thir sword from Sentinel's Fate. That one, in our guild, was a status item. That was, nobody else outside of Strike has been able to kill this mob on our server. Nobody outside of Strike will be able to hold this sword.
Mm-hmm.
When we transferred over to Crushbone, there was a week between when we transferred over and Destiny of Elios got released. That week, we killed 4 Ruin Rowan Thir. We sold that sword for an insane amount of plat. Was it discussed inside the guild before that sword was sold? Yes. Was it a heavy discussion? Yes. Was it something people kind of mulled over for a couple of minutes and then said, hey, this is my choice on it? Yes. Eventually the sword was sold for an insane amount of plat because of what it was. Prior to that, we had killed the boss. We had an applicant that was with us. All of our tanks had the sword. He was only an applicant. He wasn't actually a full-time Strike member. Was the sword transmuted in front of him? Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. I think that's awesome. I really do. I love that. And I wish all gear was like that. And I wish you, well, not you specifically. I really wish that all these like bleeding edge raid guilds would do that. Hold those things sacred. even if it's junk to you, if nobody else is doing that content, or even if it's like a small, tiny percentage of the population that's doing that content, I think you should totally keep that to yourselves. I don't think anybody else has any business carrying around that Uber hammer. You know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe I'm like way too pie in the sky, or, but I think that's great. I love that. I'm glad you transmuted that sword. I'm sorry to the guy, but maybe he doesn't listen.
I think on guildprogress.com, only 1% of the like 1,200 guilds, ranked guilds, 1,246, 1,250 of those ranked guilds worldwide, less than 1% actually got into Underfoot Depths. So if you put that in perspective, you take that less than 1%, less than 1% of 1,200 got into Underfoot Depths, and less than that, I don't even remember off the top of my head, less than that even got to killing completely all of Master Yell. I think, 11 or 12 guilds, 11 guilds worldwide actually killed Master Yell worldwide out of 1,200. You know, that kind of puts in perspective those weapons and the armor and such that came off those end boss, you know, the end boss mobs for those particular encounters. Those items become kind of sacred. And if you're not an official member, you're not going to get it. Sorry.
I have in the past come out as a opponent of selling items. I particularly don't care for it. It occurs all the time. I do believe that if you're not there for the kill, then you shouldn't have the rights to loot it. And that includes people who had to get rolled out and had to sit. I think, and I've advocated for this, and people have told me I am off my rocker for saying this, but I think unless you're there for the kill, you aren't entitled to the loot. And I think SOE should put a mechanic in that ties that, you know, to the chest of the people who participated in that encounter. These are the only ones who can loot it. Yes, I understand people can get screwed by LDs and all that sort of stuff, but such is life. You get screwed out of quest updates too that way. If you have to sit or get rolled out, you don't get a quest update when something gets killed. You don't get the achievement for it either. So
the horse has left the barn on that one.
I know it has. I don't care for it. Every guild, and I put that in quotes, every guild is doing it. I particularly don't care for it. It's something I live with. I will say, though, I think Spiders is being a little hardcore for a guy who was there on the kill, waving the sword in front of him and then muting it.
Hey.
That's hardcore. I'll give you that.
They were going by their...
I know.
Rules.
That's tough.
I love it. I think it's awesome.
It's a double-edged sword.
Ba-dum-bum.
You have to keep in mind, if we had to sit out a tank to beat in a particular encounter... But at the same point, if you're doing the hard mode mobs in this particular expansion, you need 250% crit. That tank needs those boots that dropped off that boss. He wasn't involved in that encounter. We bring that tank in, give him the boots. Here you go. You got your update. Now you have 250% crit. Now you can participate in the next encounter. It's a double-edged sword. And also, if you note, I didn't say who I sold that loot to. We have plenty of our own players inside of our guild can also buy loot as well. I can't really say who I sold it to or whatever, but we do have some of our own players that say, hey, I'll give you 600 plat for that right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be honest too. I'm not a big fan of the heirloom tag and the system that presents to us as players. But, you know, to me, and I think Allie and I have said this in the past, that's a religious discussion. There's no right or wrong. It's just the way folks think. And as you say, Ellie, the horse has left that barn. Not only has he left the barn, he's run over the field, over the mountains, and he's at another barn completely and already left that one too. You know, so it is what it is. I'm just not a big fan of it, but it's part of the... There are a lot of things I don't like, but I have to live with. It is what it is.
Interesting.
I will say, though, I'm so hardcore, though. We were in a group. I won loot by accident, and then I muted it in front of them instead of putting a ticket in. To get it transferred accidentally. So that's how hardcore I am.
Actually, Delmont, you're wrong now because they have that tag on the bottom of the loot that says can be traded with anybody that participated in the encounter.
Yes.
48 hours.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. That's when I muted this breastplate in front of somebody This was back in, I think, ROK days when we didn't have that opportunity.
That was an accident, wasn't it?
That's what I tell everybody. It was an accident. Nah, it was no accident. I did it. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I'd do it again.
That's why they have that, are you sure you want to mute this item check now?
I hit. Yeah, I don't read the screen. I hit
yes. Was it really deliberate? That was really on purpose?
No, it wasn't on purpose.
Okay, see,
I'm not that much of a jerk.
I know who it was.
I'm a jerk, but not that much of a jerk.
We have players that are jerks that way. And I'm not trying to shade them in any way. I'm just letting you know these people are, their allegiance to the guild is not always first. Their allegiance in some cases is to themselves. But that's the mentality you kind of have to understand going into this with these guilds. With the hardcore guilds, you know, it's not a Care Bear society at all. They, like, somebody starts talking about flowers, you know, burn them all. We'll deal with what's going on next.
So you can't like flowers and raid it. Is that what you're trying to say? You can't like flowers?
The mentality is it's not a Care Bear mentality. It's not a, in certain cases, yes.
You know, I don't think raiding and flowers are mutually exclusive.
Yeah, but if those flowers have awesome loot,
yeah,
damn straight.
All right, okay. We're getting goofy now.
If those flowers are dropping an upgrade for me, they're going to die.
I do want to go back to one thing that you were saying earlier, Spiders, and I do like it, is the pride of that 4-rune Rowanthir sword or items like that. And particularly when I'm playing, I like to show off the gear. I don't have stuff in my appearance slot. I like to show off what I've earned because it represents what I have killed, what I have participated in. And for me, there is a certain amount of pride in what I'm wearing. So I can certainly appreciate how you guys have killed that sort of thing. And you want to be the only ones with it because you're proud of your accomplishment. And to sell it kind of does, at least for me it would, cheapen the accomplishment a little bit. It would cheapen having done the accomplishment if I saw other people having that item who necessarily didn't participate in it and paid for it.
There is the Master Yale from the previous expansion from Sentinel's Fate dropped a bow in particular. And it was one of the better bows ever, had nice stats, everything. There are only two of them that I'm aware of on Crushbone server. I have one of the two of them. And it is in my appearance slot right at the moment. I'm not going to get rid of it. It's going to sit in my appearance slot because I was there for the kill. I earned it just like everybody else did during that encounter. I'm not going to sit there and you know, hokey poke about it. That I earned that bow, and you know, there's no way I'm going to say, hey, etc. There's only two of them on the server that I'm aware of.
And you're proud of your accomplishment. You want to show it off.
And no, Allie, you can't have my bow.
It's all right. I just quested and I got a better one. I'm kidding. Almost.
To let you know, Strike members pay attention to patch notes. We pay attention to every little patch note, every little thing that we can think of. You know, whether you talk about EQ2 players, whether you talk about cross channels with the particular classes, etc. If there's a particular thing that we can see as an advantage for being in a particular encounter, we're going to use it. A couple weeks ago, there was a particular bow that dropped from the X2.
That was fixed. How funny.
Well, most of our scouts had that. They had it either. They had it or they had the upgrade to it, but they had it. We have a tendency to kind of have gear in our bags that we used before, but not, et cetera. So most of our scouts for that weekend had the X2 bow and were hitting for extremely insane amount of numbers because the damage rating on it was so high. That was viewed as advantageous in the particular case that we were in.
Well, I wonder if that's why it was fixed.
It was so bad that the mob was even taken out for, 2-3 weeks?
The mob that dropped it?
Yes, ma'am. The mob that dropped it was actually taken out of the game for, I think, two weeks.
Yeah, that's right.
And the bow was eventually fixed, but that was viewed as, hey, that's an advantage. Every scout that had it knew that it was an advantage. Every scout that was using it, in whether it be in a global dirge channel, whether it be in a global channel, everybody that had that bow was using that bow specifically because it was so overpowered. That's
It was broken.
So let me ask you, earlier you've made reference to things like ACT, Invent. What other third-party tools do you use to make your raids successful?
I thought you didn't like third-party tools, Belmont.
I appreciate them for what they are.
We use both Ventrilo, which most guilds that are raid either use TeamSpeak or Ventrilo. TeamSpeak kind of had its years, but just ventured off. Ventrilo is our main communications tool. We use ACT because we're able to break down an encounter literally second at a time and figure out what's going on. Boss hit us for such and such. We also use a tool called Guild Connect as well.
As you alluded to, I am not a big fan of the tools, not because of what they are. I appreciate what they are. It's sometimes the interpretation of the data. Some people might like to make leaps of faith or necessarily don't understand all the data behind it and can sometimes wrongfully accuse to some degree players of not doing the best or their own part because maybe not everything is represented in those numbers. It's hard to necessarily understand and get the full picture. You can get a great statistical analysis of the encounter, but it doesn't necessarily tell you the full story.
With ACT, I've noticed over both in ACT and a couple of other games that I won't mention, anything that gives you a parse, anything that gives you the amount of damage or what was going on during the encounter is all relative to the player and the player's position. So if player A is 100 yards away from you and player B is 200 yards the opposite direction, you're not going to get the same data from both of those two players. Player B is going to have a totally different set of data versus player A from where they are in particular related to what's going on with them in particular. So if you look at that and then you look at player A and player B's data and you figure out what's going on with them, you look at what was going on at 10 seconds into the fight, 15 seconds, 20 seconds into the fight with both of those two players, and you go, okay, this is what was going on. This is what player A was experiencing, player B was experiencing. This is the change that needs to happen with both those two players. And then you also take something like Guild Connect, which you set the timers for different stuff, whether it be the global timer for an AOE, whether you say, hey, he's going to do a particular strike or melee attack at this particular moment. You set the timer on there, and then we adjust from there as we go through. Like I said before most players even engage these mobs, we've already engaged them 30 times, give or take-ish. We've already had to go through that data from all of these players and gone through and said, hey, this is what's going on all the way through the encounters. Tore them apart. Hey, these two mobs were too close together. This is what happened. Wipe the raid. Do it over again. And this is what's going on. But I've had players people that don't even play this game come in and look at my screen and go, what in the world is going on with your screen? Because it's either the amount of information that's going across my screen between ACT and Guild Connect and the raid, they don't either understand or whatever. The average player will never have to incorporate all these tools to the point that we're at. Okay, here's the all of a sudden right off the top of your head, here's the ACT timer, or here's the shout for, you know, somebody's hitting dispatch or hitting Chime of Blades or J-capping somebody. The average player will never have to go to that the point where individually, you know, everybody has an ACT timer set.
What I think ACT is excellent for is for analyzing encounters and understanding what occurred during the encounter, like you were describing. What I don't always think is fair about it is using it to compare players and using it as some form of ranking tool. Players who are side by side in the same encounter. And the scenario that I always use is in terms of healing, because I think heal parsing is sometimes a very ludicrous statistic. You can only get on a heal parse if your people you are healing are taking damage. So if your group is doing what they should be doing, say during a joust, they're moving out, they're not taking damage. Well, they have nothing to heal. However, somebody else's group who's maybe not necessarily following the joust orders and staying in reactives are going off, wards are going off. So their parse is through the roof in a heal scenario. And if somebody was to take that bar chart and throw it up there and say, look at these two people, one's a great healer and the other stinks. Well, not necessarily. I mean, you're looking at the data in a very vacuum-like scenario without taking all the other things into consideration, and you can't see all that in just ACT bar charts.
Right, like if you're with, say, you're paired up in a group as a Templar with, say, like a Mystic or a Defiler, their wards are going to tick off before you get to do anything.
Exactly.
You also toss in the other aspect of it of gear and who has gear, who doesn't have gear. The main tank usually is one of the better geared players in the raid. You know, how much damage is he realistically taking over the duration of the encounter versus Bard C over here in the corner that keeps eating all the wards? It's the healer one. It's a hit and miss sometimes. The damage one, it can be that way as well. And I'm going to use I'm a dirge, so I can use that as a great example of this. You have dirge A, B, and C. Dirge A parses 110K. Dirge B parses 115K. And dirge C parses 85K. Well, what happened? Why wasn't dirge C parsing 110K? Well, then you look at it and go, oh, dirge C, he had to res two people. That's why his parse isn't as high. ACT isn't always, for the healing and the damage meter, isn't always the best tool to look at. But if you see what they were actually doing second by second, they didn't go, oh, okay, well, now I see what was going on. And you have to kind of give a little bit of leeway on some of that. Mm-hmm. But if you have Wizard and Warlock over here that didn't have to take any AoEs, they were ranged the entire fight, all they had to do was throw spells, then yeah, their parse should be 200K.
All other things being equal.
Yeah, all other things being equal. But if all of a sudden Wizard, Warlock A and B, one's at 200K and the other one's only at 25K, what was going on?
Well, I would ask how many mobs there are.
Say, we'll just say one, hypothetically.
Okay.
And again, to Allie's point there, that's the great point. There's a lot of things that go on that you necessarily don't see in those charts that, you know, how many targets there were, who had what buffs. Mm-hmm. You can maybe see who went off to go make a sandwich instead of participating in the fight if the numbers are that drastically different. But, you know, sometimes when you're ranking somebody, well, this guy is, you know, number two and this is three. Well, there's a lot of other inputs that go into that aren't necessarily seen in a statistical Excel spreadsheet results like solution.
It's like what I said at one point that no one got to hear. ACT is, it's how you use it, I think. It's, if used responsibly, it can be a really excellent, useful tool. If misused, it's maybe not, it can be abused. Like,
it can be that elephant in the room, or it can be the sweetest kitten in the, you know, that you have snuggling up against your leg. If you're looking at it for some of the difficult encounters that we have.
I thought you said something else. You said kitten?
Kitten.
Thank you. I thought you said something else.
Kitten.
Sorry.
In some of the hard mode encounters that we have, for Destiny of Belios, we have some of them that you have curse, and then 10 seconds later you have another curse that has to be cured, and then 30 seconds go by, and then you've got another curse, and you've got another curse. If you have two curses that land, one of them has to be cured and the other one doesn't have to be cured, and the curse lands in your group, you've got, you know, one to two healers. That curse has to be cured. Somebody has to cure it. If somebody didn't cure that curse, now everybody's got the curse. So, okay, who was the healer in your group? Why didn't it get cured? So then you can look at ACT. Hey, healer A, how come you didn't cure the curse? What was going on that caused the situation where it wasn't? And you don't try to play the blame game, but when you're at our level, and I'm not trying to be, I'm the most humble person possible. I don't try to be egotistical or whatever. When you're at the level that we are at for players, if Healer A doesn't heal that curse, that the entire raid wipes. So then the raid leader goes, hey, Healer A, how come you didn't cure that curse? You know it needed to be cured. You had ACT, you had Guild Connect that called it out for you, or you had somebody in Vent call it out for you. How come it didn't get cured? Then it comes down to that player. Voila, player solved the situation. We go on.
My guess would be Healer A in that scenario would probably have already said, that was me, and here's what happened, before you even have to backtrack through it at that level.
There's been that case, yes. At times there has been that case, and other times it, oh, I'm sorry, I was paying attention to something else, or, hey, I'm sorry, this happened. Voila. But most of the time it's, and I've done it, I haven't hit Blade Dance at times. There's been times that I've totally screwed up. I caused the raid wipe. We know it. I said, okay, pull it again, problem solved.
All of these things sort of end up falling on the raid leader primarily. In your opinion, can you describe for us your ideal raid leader? Like, what qualities make somebody a great raid leader?
Non-compromising once a decision is made. And I don't mean that in a bad way. If a decision has been made, such as what we previously mentioned, a raid wipe, everybody needs to know that means a raid wipe. Don't argue about it. Don't say, et cetera. Just get it done. When you're dealing with the type of players that we're at, we have several, I don't want to say it's multi-tier, but we have like two raid leaders. We have the primary one, and then we have the guild leader. And the guild leader is the final word. There is no question about it. Don't argue with them. Just solve the problem. We all have the same goal. It's to beat the boss, whatever encounter we're working on. If he makes a final decision, just stand by it. Don't argue with him. Just go with it. Say, okay, etc. Yes, he'll be the first one to admit he's made a bad call. Be humble enough to make a bad call and say, hey, I screwed up. But at the same time, at the end of the night or the end of the encounter, trust your raid leader. He's literally holding your character's life in his hands. If he says, hey, Blade Dance now, hit Blade Dance. If he says, you know, you need to do whatever, just get it done. Don't lilly-lally about it. When you're at the level that Strike and some of the other guilds that are at the top tier are at, if a raid leader says something, just do it. Don't fight them. Don't argue with them. You know, if you're second-guessing it or whatever, wait until after the encounter and then reapproach them about it. Send them a tell about it, etc. Most raid leaders are very, you know, they'll let you know, hey, this is what's going on, or I'm seeing something different than you're not seeing. Or if you see something, just say, hey, this is what's going on. You've got to give them the input. But at the same point, don't be a pain in the butt about it and say, hey, my back is itching me. They don't care about that stuff. Just be very direct. Let them know what's going on. Don't beat around the bush and move on.
That has been my experience in the past as well. There's a time for discussion, and then there's a time for action. When the raid leader has shifted into that action mode, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, they're not looking for input at that point. They're looking for you to execute their plan. Before the poll, on the forums, after the raid is the best time for discussion. When he or she is giving commands, they're kind of expecting them to be followed, to some degree, almost to the letter of the law, and that their word is gospel at that point. And success or non-success will be determined after the fact. You know, they live with the praise when things go well. They also have to eat the pain of failure, too, at times. But at least they went with what they felt was right at the time. I find that sometimes some players like to give a lot of input, which is great, but there is a time that input is not needed anymore, and it's time for action.
As much as most players kind of don't understand it, it's a weird concept. The raid leaders know how the raid are feeling. You know, the individual players are feeling. It's hard to imagine, but they do. If somebody's not performing at 100% consistently, they know it. The raid leader already knows what's going on. I mean, our raid leader, if I recall, he has two screens going up. He has ACT on one screen, he has Guild Connect on one screen, and then he's got his actual gameplay screen on. He knows what's going on in the raid before most players have said, hey, I'm just having a crappy day. If you let him know up front, hey, I'm having a bad day, you know, stuff's going sideways. You let them know that up front. They're like, okay, cool. They're not going to chew you out necessarily. But if you just do something extremely stupid, like, hey, I just sat there and ran right through the mob and pulled the mob, they're going to call you on it. And the these guys on Vent are very, they'll call you on it right up front, right in front of everybody, no qualms about it. They're not going to beat around the bush. Hey, why'd you run up to that mob? What was going on? What were you thinking? And they expected a direct answer right back at them, not a, I'm beating around the bush, or, hey, I accidentally hit forward.
My cat walked across the keyboard.
There is none. There is no.
No.
There's no cat.
No? You can't blame the cat?
No blaming the cat. Direct answer, straight up. These guys do not beat around the bush. It is
I was
all
smelling
business.
My flowers.
It's no? All business 100% of the time. These guys, that's why I said going into this, these guys are wolf pack mentality. If you can't hang with the pace and can't hang with it, there's a front porch way over there. You need to go sit down.
Right, but in that mindset too, people are people and they're going to make mistakes. To err as human, and we all do it. You know, how many times have folks have hit evac when they meant to hit their nuke button, right? It stuff happens.
Or feigned death the main tank.
Or feigned death the main tank, absolutely. That stuff happens. It's when I think, like you say, you try to beat around the bush and give a smart aleck answer about the cat or something like that. I think if you just stand up, raise your hand, say, hey, listen, dude, I effed up. It's my fault, my bad. That was my screw up. We don't need to hunt the logs down. I hit the wrong button. I cured when I should have healed or something like that. I just hit the wrong button. I made a battle time decision. It was the wrong decision. I've learned from it, and now let's move on. I think they appreciate that a lot more than the cat walked across my keyboard type answer.
Even if the cat really did walk across the keyboard.
You get a lot more respect for, especially with these mentality of players. If you think about it logically, these are among the top 1% of worldwide players. You get a lot more respect if you come up front and admit, hey, I hit Blade Dance at the completely wrong time, and I screwed everybody in my group. You get a lot more respect out of them than if you do, oh, I missed the Blade Dance button, or I missed the Blade Dance button completely. If you're adamant not up front and admit, hey, I made a mistake, you get a lot more respect out of these players than you do from just, oh, I'm sorry, you know, my dinner walked in the door. They don't play with that. They're like, you knew we were raiding, what was going on?
Do you have any new mistakes that you've made?
Yes.
Okay.
Like what?
I'd rather not say.
Oh, Del, tell us one of yours. I love funny Del stories.
I mean, the classic would be during Rowan Thayer, where I backed up in, you know, to avoid something, and I backed into a tile that had already fallen. I did that on countless occasions. I will say, as an encounter, I was never a big fan of Rowan Thayer. I thought the encounter was inventive and certainly different, something we necessarily hadn't seen. But I am not a big fan of Super Mario Brothers EQ2. I don't like moving other than a straight line in and out for a joust. I don't like having to jump. I don't like having to run around things. I like straight lines, and I like standing still. If I wanted to play an arcade game, I would do that. To me, I don't like it when EQ2 brings arcade-like mechanics into the game. It drives me bonkers. I had a very hard time with the flying event because, again, I don't do those types of games very well. It took me many, many times to get what most players mastered in a try or two.
Wait a minute. If I recall, Delmont the Templar doesn't just AoEs.
he does now when his crit is as low as it is. Well, you're right. I don't joust AEs anymore. I don't
you
even
just
go,
die.
I don't go in. I can't even afford to run the risk of going in. I have to stay completely out the whole time.
The difference between Sentinel's Fate and this expansion, even though for every progressive expansion that's come through, crit mit kind of become an issue. Sentinel's Fate, you had to have a certain amount of crit mit in order to survive through Wing 2 of Underfoot Depths and a certain amount to survive Wing 3, you know, Wing 1, Wing 2, Wing 3. when you got onto Wing 3, you had to have definitely a certain amount of crit mit, and, you know, you could take an AoE, but not really die from it. You get into the hard mode mobs of Destiny of Belios, and crit mit suddenly becomes a huge issue. We've had I'll use my dirge as a perfect example of this. I have adornments on there that are straight crit mit in order to meet the minimum crit mit cap, or the soft cap, quote unquote, that you have to have in order to even be able to survive an AoE, let alone, you know, just take it point blank to the face. And with some of the AoEs before, it used to be the AoEs had a range on them. You know, a certain 100 yards from the mob is where the AoE range ends or whatever, 70, 25, you know, whatever. In this one, you have AoEs that go the entire zone. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, you know, you could just be, I'm standing at the door, I'm far enough away. No, it's the entire zone.
I really dislike mobs like that. If mobs can cast AEs that are the size of zones, we should be able to do it too. I only think that's fair.
Well, that would just be silly.
Without giving out any strats, there's a particular mob that involves movement. Mm-mm. And if the particular mob is not moving, without giving out the strat to this particular mob, without the mob moving, he does a massive AoE, which pretty much kills everybody, no matter what amount of crit mit you have.
Well, that's more of like a message. You're doing it wrong.
Which was quite hilarious.
I dislike that encounter because it involves lots of curing, and I hate curing.
So if we could, like, zoom back out a little bit, I think we're getting real specific here. We could zoom way out, like, think way back to when you first started raiding, or maybe before you started raiding, if you can think that far back. Now, it was probably not an EQ2, but wherever you were, was there, like, a particular incident and a particular experience, a conversation, a person that pushed you towards this playstyle that made you want to seek out raiding? How, like, basically, how did you get started raiding?
When I started raiding, it was in another game. I was actually playing with my sister. She was in the same guild as I was. We were playing. Her husband was a very competitive player in pretty much all the games that he was in. And I don't want to say me and him were head-to-head, but it was always a one-upmanship on that, and the competitive side came out on me. And from that point on, it was pretty much raiding to be able to up him and beat mm-hmm. him on it. He was the same class as I was, or similar, and it was to be better than him. From that point on, I pretty much, in any of the MMO games that I've played, have always been, this is the content that they've put in, I'm going to beat it. I have never been a person that, I don't want to say accept second, but I've always been the person that I'm going to go in there and this is what I'm going to do. The way I see it, in a weird sort of way, SOE put in this content to be conquered. We pay our subscription fee in order to have access to this material. It's there for a reason. Let's go ahead and defeat it.
So you're sort of already a competitive person, and it just happened that way, basically.
I am by far a competitive person. It, weirdly enough, it's kind of ingrained in me to do that. I'm not from the military. I don't live in the military. It's just, I'm go, go, go the whole time. I'm not trying to be Mr. Olympiad or anything like that. But at the same point, I'm still, SOE put this content in. It's there for us to beat it. Voila, let's do it. If you take somebody like me and put us into a normal instance, we get bored. And I hate to say that. It's so bad. But for the average player versus us, it's a totally different mentality to try to do it.
Well, it gives you satisfaction. It gives you happiness. That's where you find your enjoyment of the game. and different people have different types of enjoyment. I think that makes total sense to me.
I know players that they can sit there and craft for hours and hours and hours on end, or they can go out there and harvest for hours and hours on end. I can harvest, I can craft, but I can't do it for 6 hours at a time like some of them can. It's just not in there. If you were to tell me, hey, that's a times four boss that needs to be broken, or I don't want to say broken, but needs to be beaten, we're going to go in there and figure out a way to beat it. And it might take us a couple of days. It might take us 15 minutes. It might take us 4 hours, or it might take us whatever. We're going to figure out a way to beat it.
Okay, so one final last question. I think, and of course, this is the most important of all the questions. The question is this. Ham or bacon?
I'm more of a bacon guy.
Okay.
Give me a nice BLT, I'll be happy.
We're keeping statistics on this.
So it's just more of like you have to go through more effort in order to cook bacon than you do ham. I mean ham you can just toss in the oven, set it for 45 minutes, good. You have to actually watch the bacon while it's
cooking. Bacon makes you work for it.
Yes.
There you go. That's why. It's your competitive nature.
All right, moving on, we come to our favoritest thingamajig portion. We don't have a good name for it yet. This is something we started last episode, where just a quick little sound bite that of something that is our least favorite topic of the week and our favorite topic thing of the week. So, Allie, why don't you start us off this week with your least favorite thing?
Okay, my least favorite thing this week is doing a trade skill instance and your internet goes down and all the temporary raw materials go away and you have to reharvest them.
Spiders, do you have a least favorite thing for this week?
Link dead. Not by player's choice, but ISPs need to get their act together.
Alrighty. My least favorite thing was for Sony not mentioning the change that they made to Monk Pebbles being now able to be put in the currency tab, something that Ellie, that you had mentioned last week. I tried it. Sure enough, it's in there. It does work. But they should have put that in the patch notes. Why are they hiding game improvements from us?
It's a bonus. It's a freebie. It's a surprise.
I like it. I'm not disagreeing with it. I just wish they would tell us.
So for my favorite thing this week, Knoll popsicles in the Great Divide, you know, by the Shadowfang Knolls or whatever they're called.
Yes.
The little frozen Knolls. They look like Knoll popsicles. I like them.
Okay.
They make me happy.
Spiders, what's your favorite thing?
Beating a boss. Doesn't matter. Just beating a boss.
My favorite thing this week is Nathan Cathiel McCall. And the way he comments on the forums about things he's fixed, he'll often say that he doesn't know when this will be fixed, but we'll know that it's fixed when we see the following, and he'll quote us exactly what will be in the patch notes. I like that very much, and I want to give that a way to go for Cathiel.
Well, that's a good one.
So, Allie Angle now. And, Allie, are you ready for this week's Allie Angle question, where I'm going to prompt you with a question and you're going to give us your top three things?
Yes, I am totally ready.
Alrighty, so here we go. Allie, your question this week is, in the spirit of the Easter holiday, what are three things that you wish that Sony would bring back from the dead in EverQuest 2?
Well, interestingly enough, one of the things on my list that didn't make it was something you brought up earlier about not being able to sell loot, no trade gear. But that didn't make the list. My number three is non-SOGA default models. I understand there's a reason for SOGA models, and it involves all kinds of stuff that has nothing to do with gameplay. I just want the default models to be based on the original way the appearance was from EverQuest and from the launch of EQ2. I know different people have different preferences, and I also believe that some of the SOGA models might look better to some people than the traditional models. I just kind of wish we had just one, not a default and an alternate. But it really bothers me that the original models of the game are now considered the alternate.
Yeah, I can see that one as being kind of a different strokes for different folks type thing. But that's a good one. That's a change that happened. I think a lot of folks weren't particularly thrilled with it when it did happen because it was something that was, why are they changing this? But I like that one as a third option.
I don't even know when that happened. I just know I rolled a new alt at one point and it was Soga. But minor, I guess, in the grand scheme of things. That's why it's number three. My number two is Kinos or Freeport as starting cities. I know they're not going to bring back the newbie islands, but I would like to be able to start in Kinos or Freeport, not in Kelothan, Gorowin, Nariak, or Halas. I have no really tangible good reason for this wish other than when I started playing the game, there was only Kinos or Freeport, and none of these other places even existed at the time. At the first Fanfare I went to in 2006, at the Saturday night event, which was like basically open bar and a lot of karaoke, and it was just good times. A shouting match broke out, people on one side yelling Kinos and other people yelling Freeport. Well, you can't really do that with all these other places mixed in. They're just too many. It's not a very good reason, but coming up, you know, we've seen the producer's letter from Smokejumper. He said some stuff about revamping Freeport and bringing evil back. Maybe that's a sign that great things are yet to come for both Freeport and Kino. So I have my fingers crossed for that.
Yeah, grumpy old Dell likes that. He likes the way that it was. He likes Freeport, and he likes Kinos as starting cities. And I have to agree, yes, bring those back, along with some sexy.
So my number one thing for this, whatever it is, what is this category? Things I wish they'd bring back from the dead is teaching you your class. Now, you knew this was going to come up again. I'm like a broken record with this. When the game first launched, there was an archetype, subclass, class system. I'm not saying I want that system back, but part of that system was a class-specific test that you had to pass before you could, quote-unquote, become your class. I would like to see that test brought back in some way, only maybe in a bigger, more elaborate form. Some sort of a check before you can level past a certain point. And so I kind of thought this through a little bit. Maybe this could take the form of like a Hallmark quest, something longer, be built into like sort of a journey through the levels given to you by an NPC mentor when you start out, say maybe around level 9 or something. Maybe this mentor teaches you some of the lessons in like a sparring type atmosphere. And then in order to get from level 9 to level 10, you have to complete a test to make sure you've learned that one specific lesson. And I think it should be something that actually makes sure that you're learning the lesson, not something that you can twink through or group through or just zerg. And then maybe you have another test at, say, 19 to get to 20, 29, 39, and all the way up to the max level, whatever max level is at the time. Something that has to be soloed, something that's hard enough that you can't get past it without doing the lesson. I want them to build something into the game that forces people to learn how their class works.
That one I see as a challenge. I certainly can appreciate the fact that folks need to learn their classes, but I think it would be very challenging for them to present some form of, and I'm doing air quotes right now, standardized testing for all warlocks, wizards, templars, and inquisitors to make sure that they actually can tell the difference between a heal and a cure, an AE, and a nuke, and that sort of stuff. So I agree with the premise. I'm not sure what the best vehicle to do that is, but I agree, yes, there should be some way that they need to bring back the teaching of the classes like we had with the old archetype system. So I do agree with it, just not sure how to do it.
Me neither, but they're so smart, they'll figure it out.
So in review for this episode's Alley Angle, the question was, in the spirit of the Easter holiday, what are three things you wish that they would bring back from the dead in EverQuest 2? Ellie, your number three was?
Non-Soga default models.
And number two?
Kinos or Freeport as starting cities.
And your most important resible thing in EQ2?
Teaching you your class.
Well, I think those are excellent ideas. And if folks also are thinking at home right now as they're listening to the podcast, what they would like to see Resden game, they should drop us an email and let us know and share their thoughts with us. So I think that just about wraps it up for everything here on episode number 22 of EQ2 Talk. Ellie, was there anything else we had?
No, I think that's pretty much it.
Okay, so first off, let's say a big thank you to this week's corporate sponsor, Orkin Pest Control, brought to us by the Orkin Man. So if you have a spider that's been pestering you or some mosquitoes that are buzzing in your ear, or you're just hearing some roboting sounds off in the distance, call Orkin right away and get them out to your home. They've been keeping pests in their place for over 100 years. Orkin Pest Control.
And we definitely want to thank spiders for being our special guest and talking about raiding with us and all of our listeners. Del, you're supposed to say something.
I thought he was going to jump in with how great it was here to be with us.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, I guess it wasn't that great, so I'll keep moving then. Hold on.
No, let's give him a chance.
He's blown his chance. There's no more chance for him. He's done. He's dead to me.
Oh,
wipe it, Allie. Wipe it.
This, eh?
Wipe it.
Fine. You know what? I'll just transfer now, come over there, unrest server, and duel the Delmon. How's that sound?
So folks have any thoughts, comments, suggestions, feedback, or want to talk about any of the things that we've been talking about here on EQ2 Talk, you can reach us in a couple ways. First, you can drop us mail. So for me, that's delmon@eq2talk.com.
And I'm Allie at eq2talk.com. You can also catch us in game. You can reach us at eq2.unrest.alicious, A-L-I-S-C-I-O-U-S.
And I'm eq2.unrest.delmon, D-E-L-L-M-O-N. We also have a super duper new feature that we're unveiling this week. We have finally gotten around to implementing a chat channel in game for the EQ2 Talk podcast. So if you want to join us in game, you can do so anytime by typing /join eq2.unrest.eq, the number 2, talk, T-L-A-K.
Can't even spell talk. And we also have a new chat channel we've unleashed.
What are we, the plague?
This shouldn't be this hard.
It should.
Okay, so we have a special announcement.
All right, let me try it again.
When it comes to spelling,
all right, here we go.
Now, yeah, you got to throw it to me, though.
I will throw it to you.
All right.
All right. We also have a super duper new feature that we're unveiling this week. Allie, what is it?
We have a chat channel in game.
Finally. We've finally gotten around to doing this, haven't we?
Yeah. Took long enough. So now you guys can razz us while we're playing.
And how would they do that, Allie?
Sorry. You just have to join eq2.unrest.eq2talk.
And both you and I will be in there whenever we're playing the game, so folks can stop by, say hello, give us some in-game feedback, or chat us up whenever they want.
Or talk to each other, maybe.
Or talk to each other.
Maybe those Freeport people can get together.
Look at us, Allie, putting people together.
That should be our new tagline.
Making friends out of friends.
In friendly places.
And don't forget to also check us out over on Lur Facebook, where you can search for us as EQ2 Talk.
Or you just get to us directly by facebook.com/EQ2Talk.
That wraps up just about everything for episode number 22. We hope to see you all back here for episode number 23. And say goodnight, Allie.
Goodnight, Allie. I didn't even get to use my line that I wanted to use.
Voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir avec fromage?
A 1980s princess phone. Save it for the camera, Del.
And I'm malicious.
You need to be. You're so mean.
I know.
Too mean sounding.
All right. We also have a super new feature for you to...
Bring Happy Del back. What happened to him?
He left with Sexy.
Okay.
All right. 1.5 takes.
All right, I liked it better when I kicked them out. That was a good answer.
It's amazing. We have 10 minutes of recording and about 30 seconds of talking.
Dell is making the little cuckoo thing on his head, right?
Helm of the Wabbit.
You've just earned a cookie. Sorry, I'm really hot. Stop! You're ruining this podcast.